Tomorrow is the great Jewish holiday of Father's Day. So I'd like to dedicate these words to Avraham Yisrael Ben Shaya, to my father, Alvin Ira Kosak, of blessed memory. I want to discuss today blessing, particularly the anatomy of Birkat Kohanim, of the priestly benediction. I want to talk about the grammar of the blessing and how that grammar helps unpack for us the halakha that develops around it. I want to talk about the mutuality of blessing as it comes to us through the mystical traditions. And finally, I want to talk about barriers and their connection to blessings. My father taught me how to ride a bicycle, sort of. He tried to teach me how to ride a bicycle, but even at that age, I found that I was embarrassed that I didn't already know how to ride. I must have been six or so, and as the other kids in the neighborhood were running around, I was so concerned about their judgment of me for not knowing how to ride that I only let him give me one lesson as he ran behind me and as I tumbled down, which most of us do when we learn to ride a bike. Except that it's for my son Shia, who got on a bike and without any hesitation started riding first time. But that's the exception. I was embarrassed, and I stopped even trying to ride a bike until sometime in ninth grade, I said enough to this, and I went to my cousin's house, who lived 4 miles away in the other part of town, figuring that there no one at least would know me, and I'd be able to learn. Of course, Alan Cadison from my geometry class was there, looking out the window, the best laid plans. But I had decided, and within just a few short hours, I was happily riding as though I had done it for years. And within a year, I began working in a bike shop. And shortly after that, I became a USCF Category 4 bike racer. It was all there waiting for me to receive it. Birkat Kohanim, for those who were here last night, the priestly benediction is our oldest extant prayer in all of human history. We have the oldest archaeological record of it then on a small silver scroll. And the words we all know or have heard, or if you're fortunate, got to hear feel Rabbi Stamford's hands upon your head at the time of your becoming a bar or bat mitzvah. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha. May God bless you and watch over you. Ye'er Adonai panav v'lecha v'yichunecha. May God lift up God's countenance to you and grace you, meaning give you more than you deserve. Yisadonai panav lecha v'yisem lecha shalom. May God raise up his face and grant you peace. Now, the grammar in here is an interesting feature of the Hebrew language, which has just as many tenses as other languages, but fewer forms by which to explain meaning. And that can create some ambiguity in just what's being said. Yivarechecha could just mean God bless you. It can be almost an exhortative infinitive form of the verb. But it can also have a conditional element to it. May God bless you, or allow God, let God bless you. It's one of the unusual features of the Hebrew language that the same form can introduce a variety of nuances to it. I think that sense of the conditional ends up encoded in the halakha. The halakha never says why it's the case. It simply tells us that the way this blessing works is that the priest says it, the high priest says these words, and that they come, these blessings, either from the priest according to some or directly from God according to others, to the people, but that we have an obligation to receive the blessing. And the mechanism for this is that we have to pay attention to it and think that we want to receive the blessing itself. That if we turn away from the blessing, either literally or figuratively by inattention, the blessing will not devolve upon us. We will not be blessed. That's a fascinating and deep and subtle notion, that in order for blessing to work, there has to be a mashpia, someone who provides the blessing, and a mitbarach, somebody who can receive the blessing. There's a dialectic, if you will, in which each party is equally responsible for the blessing to take effect. And that's the straight up halakha. If you were to open the Shulchan Aruch or the Torah and read up on this blessing. And I believe, as I said, that it comes from that strange verbal anomaly, the conditional element of blessing. It's developed throughout its history. So much commentary has been written on it. But as you know, one of my favorite teachers is the Netivot Shalom, the Slonimer Rebbe. And he looks at a formulation of the blessing in which we speak of Aaron's Kedushato, the Aaron's holiness, and that the blessing is given bi'ahava, that the blessing is given in love and through love. And I think we know that for love to really be most effective, there is indeed someone who gives and someone who receives. One of the roots for the word love is actually a giving. Yehev, if you go into the Aramaic. So if for a gift to work, you have to bring it in to yourself as well. And the Netivot Shalom speaks about that. For all blessing, that love is the source of this, both spiritual and physical blessings, this connective tie that allows both parts of the equation to work. And I think that if we consider our own lives, we'll find moments where we have been open to receiving so much good stuff in our lives, and that simultaneously we can think about when we've turned away from it through bitterness or pessimism or pain or disbelief or any other number of factors which keep us from being receptive to this mashpia, to the God who is constantly bringing goodness into the world. I think that's a beautiful reminder for all of us as to how to align ourselves with our own lives and with the gifts that do surround us. And I think it's been well marked that any individual looking at the conditions of their lives will look at that glass of water and make a decree about its fullness or emptiness. That has nothing to do with the ontological truth of the water in the glass. It is a poise that we take in stance to the world that determines how we interpret our lives itself. And those notions bring me, strangely, to a rather wonderful teaching by Rabbi Nachman of Bratslav about minyot, about barriers in our lives, because I think most of us try to avoid problems that come at us. Sometimes we're told, well, walk around the wall, don't try to walk through the wall. But I think a lot of us, when the going gets tough, we get going, but the other way. We give up on what we are called to do or on the opportunities that await us. Rabbi Nachman says, all the barriers and obstacles which confront a person have only one person: to heighten the person's yearning for the holy deed which needs to be accomplished. It is part of our nature that the greater the barrier standing in the way of a certain goal, the more a person desires to achieve it. First of all, I think that says something remarkable about Rabbi Nachman that probably is not true for most of us. There are people who are constituted so that when something gets in the way, they pursue it with even greater fervency. But I think a lot of us don't do that. So first of all, we understand that Rabbi Nachman is a person of some persistence. When a Jew needs to do something whose purpose is to strengthen his or her very core, especially when it is something upon which their whole being depends, the person is given desire from above, and the desire is created through the barrier which is sent to them, and the barrier itself causes this yearning to grow. You should understand, therefore, that there is no barrier in the world that you cannot break if you want to. The way I want to read Rabbi Nachman to apply it here is for those of us maybe who aren't already at this remarkable level where we see a problem and embrace it as a gift, but rather to remember this dialectic of blessing and love that is contained within Birkat Kohanim, so that when we come upon the obstacles in our lives, that we just turn our awareness a little bit and look at it in the way that Rabbi Nachman does. That the barrier is there not to discourage us, but to strengthen us and our receptivity to the answers and the solutions which are there. And I think that when we look at the truly great individuals in the world, the Martin Luther Kings, the Mahatma Gandhis, the entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley who persevere through one failure after another, it is because they understand this deep truth that obstacles are there to deepen us and to teach us better ways to solve what confronts us. We've all heard about Thomas Edison and the 1,000 different materials he used to try to create the light bulb filament. Most of us would have given up, and when Edison was asked why he continued with so many after so many failures, he looked at them and said, "What are you talking about failures? I learned about 999 ways that you can't make a filament." He said, in other words, that the obstacles of our lives are not setbacks, but forms of learning. And because he did that, he was able to take that which looked like a problem and turn it into a blessing. He understood that the world was constantly mashpia lo, was constantly providing material and blessings to him, and he was intent on accepting them. And as a consequence, he received the big blessing that he was looking for. It could just be some trivial coincidence that the world's oldest blessing, found by Gabriel Barkai in the late 70s outside of Jerusalem, happened to be Birkat Kohanim. It might have been any other blessing, ones maybe we've even forgotten, But I'd like to think that if the world provides us with the constant flow of possibility that's upon us to receive, that actually it's not an accident, that the oldest blessing that we have a record to should indeed be the one that reminds us that when you fall off the bike, you've simply learned a way not to ride a bike. And that when you decide to get back on, you may find yourself with a high school job, learning to repair bikes, racing them, feeling the wind in your hair, and learning that you can fly. So may we all. Shabbat Shalom.